kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have some more reviews we got to tackle this episode as I've been away for a wedding and am now back ready to party with some normal people instead of my actual real life friends. So we're starting the show off with CJ. You're here.
I am here.
You are here. It's a special occasion that you're here.
It's a very special one.
Yeah, you reviewed something.
And it's a interesting one.
Just interesting?
Well, I didn't want to spoil how I feel about the game yet, so I was about to say it, and I was like, interesting instead.
So before that, how are you doing? How's things?
I'm doing good, you know, been achievement hunting, got a promotion at my job, so I have to work more often.
Promotion? Congratulations.
Yeah, I mean, it's all right.
It's not as cool as planning a wedding in Rome like my friend, but you know.
You know, I wish I had that kind of money, then I wouldn't need to get a promotion.
Promotion's cool too, I guess.
It is. It's okay. I mostly care about the fact that I've been achievement hunting, though. I like that more.
What games have you been hunting in?
Last month, I completed Crackdown, that old one.
Oh, nice.
The collectibles in that game suck ass.
Yeah, they were better in Crackdown too.
And then I've been playing Defiance again. The 360 version, though, not the 2050.
It's the same thing.
It is. It's just one of them's not... I don't know why they didn't just make it backwards compatible. That would have been great.
Money?
I guess.
I mean, yeah. Even though it's free to play, people who already spent a lot of money on the original version can spend more money now. Hooray!
I wonder if the store is still broken in the new version, because in the old version, it still doesn't work. It's been broken for like 3 months.
Really?
Yeah.
In what way?
In the fact that it just doesn't load the store. Like, you can't see anything in the store.
Huh.
So, I don't know if 2050 is having that problem, but the original one is.
That's weird. You'd think if there was one thing that was going to work right in a free-to-play game,
exactly.
It would be the store that takes your money.
Exactly!
Who knows? Maybe they shut it down and they're just trying to get everyone to move on.
I was looking at the forums. It's been... The store has been broken since before 2050 came out.
Huh.
It's been like 3 months. That's just crazy. Haven't fixed it. Yeah. I don't know what's up with that, but we could always talk about better games.
Indeed. Is that a segue?
It is. I got good at them.
No, you didn't.
It's still better than most of yours.
It is. That's very true. Anyway, first game we're going to talk about tonight on the show is No Man's Sky, developed and published by Hello Games, released July 24th on the Xbox One for $49.99. In No Man's Sky, every star is the light of a distant sun, each orbited by planets filled with life, and you can go to any of them you choose. Fly smoothly from deep space to planetary surfaces with no loading screens and no limits. In this infinite procedurally generated universe, you'll discover places and creatures that no other players have seen before, and perhaps we'll never see again. CJ, how is No Man's Sky? Because this is kind of a rebirth for the game.
Well, I thought we were going to start with the game I reviewed, but
I mean,
I guess we could do this. I mean, the description's pretty accurate, minus the no loading screens. I mean, it's just they don't say loading, but it's like, you know, transportation and stuff like that, where it's just like, you just see your starship fly for a second and shit like that. It's like, it's disguised from loading screens.
They're transitions.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Destiny with that. It's like you see your ship flying into the planet. It's like, this isn't a loading screen. This is a cutscene, but it's not. It's absolutely a loading screen.
Okay, there's no black screen that says loading.
No. That's correct. You're correct there. No, but this game is great. It's a exploration and survival game that basically takes place wherever you want it to take place. You start at one end of the universe, and you're trying to make your way to the center for the main story, but you can completely ignore the main story if you want. You don't have to do it. You could absolutely just do whatever you want. You can go after the first, like, 6 hours. There's a lot of tutorial to the game that's like, and it's not so much that there's a lot of different tutorial things, it's that it takes a while to get through the tutorial because you have to collect the items to build. Like, you start out and your climate control and life support are broke. So you gotta be real quick, go get the stuff that you need to repair that so that you don't die. Which is kind of crazy to think about, because it's like, while it's a tutorial thing, that's like the area you might die the most, because it's figuring out the game while you're playing that section. You don't know what the heck to expect yet. So you're like trying to figure out, how am I supposed to craft this? How am I supposed to repair this stuff? And it's broken, so if you get spawned, because it's random where you spawn, you can be on any planet. If you get spawned on a planet that's super dangerous, you might not be able to survive long enough to repair your stuff.
Did that happen to you?
Not exactly. See, there's what happened to me on my first death and my only death in the game is that when I started the game, I didn't know what these sentinels are. And basically what they do is they pop out of the ground every so often and they just scan items around in the world. And sometimes they come over and try to scan you too. And basically the only thing is they don't like it when you do things that provoke them. Like even if you're just mining right next to them, it scares them and then they attack you.
Oh God.
So, and they're basically just like security drones that scan the planet and make sure everything is going smoothly. But they're very quick to be like, hey, I saw you kill that rock, because they believe everything's sentient or something. I don't know what's up with that. And so then they'll come and start shooting you. And it's not so unforgiving that it's awful, because it does kind of alert you when there's one nearby. And it'll alert you if they can see you or not. Because if they can't see you, then you can do whatever you want. And you don't deal with them that often unless you wind up on a planet that's like severely dangerous where they'll shoot you on sight.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, sometimes some of them are a little more, I guess, rampant or something. I don't really know why they decide to shoot you. I mean, I don't really get the reasoning in them being there. But, you know, whatever. They can do what they want to do. They're jerks. And they killed me the first time. Because I started mining to try to get my supplies so that I could build my oxygen, or not oxygen, my climate control system back up. And I didn't know that if I broke things around it, it would piss it off. Now, it doesn't do a whole lot of damage to you, so I was able to kill the first one, but when you kill them, they work kind of like police in GTA, where it's like, if you kill one of them, that pisses off more, and then they come up. And eventually, you can piss them off so much that they send like these robotic dog things after you that are even more dangerous than the flying little, looking like 343 Guilty Spark assholes.
Oh, God.
But, They're pretty dangerous too, because they have like huge laser beams that they shoot out for a full like second. So that thing's actually dangerous, and you should be scared.
So then, don't fuck with them, and they won't fuck with you.
Basically, and also don't fuck with other things when they're around.
Gotcha.
But other than that, once you build that kind of stuff up, and you eventually have to then repair your starship, and so then you got to go and do that. And you get a starting basic one that's really simple. I'm just like 15 hours into one playthrough, and I still have that ship. Like, it takes a while to get a new ship, because you either got to find one, which I did find one, but it was severely broken, and I did not have the materials at the time to go ahead and rebuild it. And it was the same class as mine. It was just slightly better, so I figured, who cares? I'll just deal with that later. And I kept mine. And it doesn't despawn, so you can come back to this starship you found later and get that. So it's not going
to
be.
If you remember how to get there.
Yes. Which, there's actually a great way to do that. In this game, there's base building. And in order to build a base, you have to build a base computer. And then once you build that, you can build a base around the area. And that kind of like marks that as like, oh, this is one of your bases. So you can always come back to this. And on top of that, once you get far enough in the game, you can unlock what is called a transporter, teleporter, whatever the hell. It's basically like Stargate gates. Mm. And what it does is, you would place that at your base, and then all of a sudden you can teleport to any other bases that you have with the teleport. Well, actually, you can teleport to any of the other bases. It's just that if it doesn't have a teleporter, you can't teleport back. And you can teleport to all space stations that you've already discovered, because every space station already has one of those teleporters in it. And that's super useful, but you do got to wait until you're out of the tutorial, and you got to unlock that by using salvaged technology, which you find underground. And you can find them because there's a scanner that you have with LT that basically allows you to kind of see what's around you and gives you a hint, like there might be alien technology over there that'll teach you a new a word in a language. Because when you're talking to them, none of the words they say are actually English. It's all in their language, and you have to learn the words in order to speak the language.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's actually really awesome. I mean, the game isn't mean about it, so it'll kind of give you a hint as to what they're reflecting to you, mm-hmm. but you can't actually tell what they're saying. You just kind of got to give the, like, this, like, it'll say, this guy looks like he's willing to trade, and then you can kind of propose a trade and see if you want to buy stuff off of him or if you want to sell stuff to him. And you can also, if they have a starship and you're interacting with them in their ship, you can offer to, like, buy or exchange ships. And that's where that's where it's actually expensive. Because so far, I've actually managed to build up a decent amount of money using the fun economy system that they have in the game, where each star system in the game has a different, like, economy and what they are looking for. So you can make more money by selling certain things in different systems.
Oh, that's neat.
Which is super useful, because you can, like, find something really common on one and then go to another one where that's not really an existing thing. So you can sell that for a much higher profit. Then find what's really good here and take that back to the other one where they don't have that. And you can sell that for a high profit.
Kind of like playing the stock market a bit.
Exactly. The whole game is like, yes, take advantage of trade routes. That's going to be your number one helpful thing if you want to build up your starship, build up your upgrades for your mining laser, which I have a funny story about. You start with like a C class of everything. So you have a C class ship and you have a C class mining tool. And I got lucky. I helped this one guy out and he was super happy and he proposed to trade with me for the mining laser. And I got upgraded to an A class and he took my C class.
Oh, wow.
Which was really cool. It's like the game offered me that. It didn't cost me anything to do it besides what it was. Is it wasn't in complete working condition, but it still worked better than my C class. It's just you have more terminals that you have to repair in order to use them. And those terminals allow for you to place upgrades in them. So basically, you just can't upgrade it until you've repaired it, which is not hard. So you
basically lucked out big time.
Exactly. And you can come across very lucky situations all the time. Like something I didn't even know was in the game until the other day. I was already over 10 hours in. And I didn't know that freighters were even a thing in the game. And then one day it was like, I randomly came across an encounter in space where it was like, kill these three ships to protect the freighter that's being attacked. And when I eventually killed them, which the space combat's a little challenging, but I actually like it. I've heard some people complaining about it on the internet, but I think it's actually a fun system and it works well. But once I killed them off, they invited me to go into the freighter. I was like, okay, I didn't know this was a thing. So I docked in the ship. I went and spoke to the captain. He's like, thank you so much for helping us. As a thank you, we want to become a part of your fleet. I was like, what?
Oh, nice.
You can have fleets in this game? That's really awesome. And then you can send those fleets on missions that you don't actually have to partake in, and then they can get you a ton of, like, credits and rare artifacts and stuff like that that you can sell and make a ton of money off of these expeditions.
I never knew that was a thing in the game.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's like, I was blown away by this, and I was so happy to find that. And then on the second expedition I sent them on, they got critically damaged, and they were like, please allow us to return or we might die. And I was like, but is it worth it? I let them come back because I'm not a monster. But it's still, I wanted them to give me money.
I'm proud of you for doing the right thing, CJ.
I'm glad that you're proud of me.
So something they made a big deal about being in the game now is multiplayer. When the game first launched a few years ago, there was talk that it was supposed to be online. You could run into other people, and that never came to be. But now they have actual, real, legit online play. How is it?
It's good. It's actually really, really good. It's the network coding is really good, so there's not a whole lot of lag issues. Like, I was able to play with my friend, and we had no issue being able to build with each other on my base. And he helped me out, and we built a really cool base on this amazing planet that's beautiful, and you don't even have to deal with the environmental hazard on that planet because it's perfectly air. It's like the temperature is the perfect temperature for humans, so you don't even have to deal with that. You just have to have the life support because it doesn't have oxygen. And it was it's in a beautiful planet, but it's full of water, so I wanted to make something that was interesting, and he gave me the idea of, well, let's build a base that's a boat base. Like, And that was a great idea. So we started building, and the building in the game is really good. You, of course, it's going to take some like wiggling around to get certain things the way you want it, just like any other building game. It's not going to be 100% perfect because they don't have every single part you need, like a ship base. We're using stairs to simulate the like curving, but the stairs means that there's air holes in between them. So it's not perfect, but it's still, it's really cool to see that. And that we were able to build that without having any issues playing together. Like, if he placed an item, it was immediately there. It wasn't, like, fading in and out for a second. So I would drop down into the ocean or anything like that. It was perfect. Everything was working great. He was much further in the game than me. So he was able to actually drop items that were useful for me that I couldn't access yet. Like, I only have the portable refinery, which is an okay refinery, but it's not amazing, and you can only do like a little bit with it. You can't combine things with it. It's basically just to turn one thing into another. But there's a full size refinery that goes in your base that allows you to combine, like, say, oxygen and carbon to make like condensed carbon, and then it actually like exports it at a much higher thing. Like, you're going to get way more for your value with each of these. Say, in a normal one, it's going to be like a 2-to-1. So you're going to use two pieces of carbon for condensed carbon. In that one, one piece of condensed carbon is equal to 6 pieces of condensed carbon when you combine it with oxygen.
Mm.
So you're going to get way more return out of it. And it was awesome that he was able to drop that for me in my world, because I still don't have access to that.
Jeez.
So it's really awesome that he was able to get that for me, set it down in my world, and now I can never remove it because otherwise it's gone. But it's awesome that I have it, and he placed it in a good enough spot that I'm happy with it anyway. And he was also able to build me a weird like ground vehicle station that makes a vehicle kind of like in Borderlands. You have those catch-a-rides where it just kind of materializes a vehicle. Well, this is kind of the same thing, where it just creates a vehicle, and I'm not supposed to have access to that for a while, but I have it. And that's really awesome that I'm able to drive around. I didn't even know land vehicles were a thing in the game.
Damn.
It's like, it's really cool that he was able to help me out and get me started on my one base, and this has made my journey even easier. And on normal difficulty, it's already not too much of a hassle. I mean, you got to refill your oxygen tank every so often, and you got to refill your battery for your hazmat control every so often with some sodium or some oxygen. But on normal difficulty, that's not too bad. I did play permadeath difficulty for a little bit, though.
Oh, boy.
That one's just annoying. There's nothing fun about it. It's like, okay, in regular mode, you got about 7 minutes after every recharge before you have to do another recharge. In permadeath mode, it's like 2.5 minutes.
Oh, God.
So you're running out of stuff so quickly. You got to, honestly, the whole thing is just you focus on getting those while you're trying to get the other items. Like, the quest is the side objective in that game. The first one is to survive when you're on permadeath difficulty.
Yeah.
Whereas on normal difficulty, it's like, you can kind of just worry about surviving on the side. You're not really worried about dying. But on permadeath, there was a few close calls I had. Like, I was not enjoying it as much. I only did it because my friend had a permadeath save, and he was at the end, so I was able to get the achievement for beating it at the end.
Oh, God.
But I
cheater.
Had to. Hey, I still had to play like 4 hours of it to unlock the hyperdrive so that I could do it. So it still took a while. But hey, I'm going to get that 72 gamer score. Yes, it has weird gamer score values.
Ooh, tell me more about that.
None of the achievements end in a 5 or 0 at all.
Yes.
None of them.
Yes.
None
of them.
They're all 16, 32, 64, or 72.
I love it.
Those are the values in the game. I
love it.
I'm surprised to say I'm not as bothered by it as I thought. Mainly because I really love this game so much, I want to get the 1,000 anyway. I love this game. I can't stop playing it. And the achievements aren't that bad. They just take time. So if you can get people with you, you're not going to have a really hard time getting it.
I love games with weird achievement values. Like, we just covered Castaway Paradise, which is kind of like an Animal Crossing Harvest Moon style game. And everything in there was like ones and threes and sevens and eights. And I loved it. I love games that do that just because it pisses so many other people off.
See, that's funny. TA actually did a poll because of this. And it showed that 13% of gamers on TA refuse to play a game with gamer score values that aren't 5 or 0.
That's so stupid. That is so dumb. It's a game.
I would be so upset if I... Well, I mean, I wouldn't, because I wouldn't know how amazing this game was. But in the case that if I knew it, I would not refuse to play this game because of that. This game is so good that, honestly, it shouldn't matter. You'll get the 1,000 if you enjoy the game anyway. You're just going to play the game enough to do it.
And in my eyes, that makes it more of a purchase because of the weird achievement values. I love when game companies do that. It makes me so happy.
I don't know why the choice was to do it, but sure, why not? I mean, it's not bothering me any. I have 392 gamer score in it so far.
Nice. And I love it.
And eventually I'll have 1,000, and it won't be a big deal anyway, because that's how I see it. It's like, doesn't matter if you complete it.
Exactly. Be a man and complete it like a real person instead of just crying about the achievement values.
Or just get enough. There's still the possibility of just play it enough to get the value that's like it evens out to be it anyway.
Yeah.
Because there's been a couple of times where it's evened out. Like, I think at 180 gamer score, I had just 180.
That works.
Like, it wasn't like I had weird values anymore, but I kept playing the game and got the weird value back because I just liked the game too much.
Yeah.
Like, I just got to go for the 1,000. But with everything I love about the game, I can't forget to say that there are some issues.
Let's hear
it. Have a habit of doing that. All right. One, I already talked about the permadeath mode. I didn't care for that.
Oh, but I meant to ask, is there an easy mode that lessens the survival stuff, or is it just normal and permadeath?
Normal, survival, which is permadeath without the permadeath, but it's the same difficulty. And then there's permadeath that just brings that survival with the only one life.
Gotcha.
So, but normal is basically like you're easy, because it's not that rough to play on normal. Like, yeah. It might be rough at the beginning, but this is one of those games that it starts hard and gets easier as you play it.
Gotcha.
And then the other issues are there's some weird control scheme choices in this one. Typically with a game with sprint, you would think that it's going to be on the left stick or left bumper or something like that. Never in my life have I ever played a game in which it's tied to the right stick.
Interesting. Yeah, that's usually like melee attacks.
Interestingly enough, the scanner, which is something that you send out like a shockwave and it kind of scans things around you. You would think, well, you know, considering that has some, I mean, at least comparability to like looking around since you use that to visualize things, maybe that would be on the right stick, but that's on the left stick. I feel like those two things could have just been switched.
And there's no way to just switch it in options?
Not in the options that I've seen. I mean, obviously on Xbox, you can just change your controls or just like do what I did and just get used to it. But it's throwing me off in other games now. I tried playing Killing Floor 2 last night to get an achievement real quick. And I kept trying to sprint with right stick. And I was like, why am I melee? It's throwing me off at that. The other thing, there's a gameplay options menu. So you'd think that first and third person would be in that, where you can switch between those. It's not. It's in a convoluted menu system where you have to press down on the D-pad, then go over and use utilities, and that's where you can hit A to toggle the view.
Weird.
Who's ever going to find that on accident?
You'd think they would map it to like the view button or something.
Well, you would think they would just map it or put it in the gameplay options menu.
Yeah, true.
It's a gameplay option menu where you can change the field of view, which is very rare for a console game. But so you would think that that would be there, but it's not. Because I prefer to... It actually now... I remember when it originally launched, there was only first person. Now it starts you in third person. And the third person camera is not that good in this game. It's too over the shoulder, where it's just basically like right over your shoulder. It doesn't give you enough room. So I prefer to play in the first person, although that can provide some glitches from time to time. There is graphical glitches on launch sometimes, and it requires you to restart the game. Like the one time I launched the game, the frame rate was like 5. Like I couldn't do anything. It made me feel like the right stick on my controller was broken because it would like react so slowly and then just start doing its own thing. So I had to relaunch the game, and then it worked fine. Then earlier today, I went to launch the game, And when I launched the game, I was in first person, but I was seeing like a weird invisible skeleton of if I was in third person. Like I could see the inside of my helmet and stuff.
Wow.
And it was weird. And it was annoying. So I had to relaunch the game and it fixed it. So relaunching the game generally fixes the issues, but there are minor issues with that.
Speaking of glitches and issues, there's been a lot of news and reports of save corrupting and save destroying issues. Have you run into those? How prevalent are they? Have they been taken care of?
I've run into one, and it was luckily not a huge issue. So basically, my game crashed at one point, which is the only time it's ever crashed. It's only crashed once in over 20 hours, or just around 20 hours. Which isn't bad, considering how often Xbox One games like to crash anyway. Mm-hmm. It's very possible it was just the system. But when we reloaded, that was when I was playing with my friend. And when I reloaded my game, my entire base was gone that we were working on.
All of
the things he upgraded, everything was gone. Luckily, I figured out how to fix it. Because we put down a manual save thing, which is a little module you can build, and then you can place that around in the world. And basically what it does is it just allows you to hold X on it and it'll manually save. It had loaded my autosave, which was a minute after the manual save, but I had the idea that's like, wait a minute, how would everything disappear, but yet the manual save thing would disappear too, but the actual manual save still exists. So I reloaded the manual save and everything was there.
Oh, nice.
So it's basically just like the automatic save doesn't save your base building until you've reloaded the game or something. I don't know what happened with that. It was a weird glitch. But when I reloaded the manual save, the save spot was there. Everything around it was there. Everything was fine. I was like, thank God, because I would have just lost all of those amazing things he gave me. I would have lost my base, which, by the way, I gave the greatest name of all time. My base... is named Bodie McBoat Base.
Oh, God damn
it. It's a boat base, so I had to do it.
You're the worst.
Hey, look. It's a great time.
But did you have any other gripes about the game besides what you mentioned?
Originally, I thought it was too pricey just because the game is... Obviously, there's with all the backlash, the game got cheap quick.
Yeah, you could pick it up for like $20 on PlayStation right now.
Exactly. I saw it on GameStop at one point on sale for $10. So it feels a little weird to spend $50 on it, but the reason I'm not as bothered by it is the fact that it contains enough content to warrant the $50. Like, if you were to spend the $50, you're going to get enough playtime with it. You're going to enjoy the game enough that it's worth the $50. It's just weird because you can buy it cheaper elsewhere.
Yeah.
But the game itself is absolutely worth $50. Like, the game is amazing. I'm surprised it's not a $60 game, but mainly because on Steam it is a $60 game, which is why I'm surprised. But it's absolutely worth that $50 price tag because you're going to play the game enough to enjoy it. You're going to love the interaction you can have with the aliens and how your rank goes up with them. And if you get that high enough, you can do harder missions for them that get you better things. And they'll like you more, so they're more willing to give you good trades. Like how I got that amazing thing, even though I was a low level at that time, so it makes no sense how I got that amazing mining laser. But I'll take it. It's like great moments like that that'll just make you go like, what? That's what this game's about. It's those shockers that are so much fun. And I don't mean the shocker. I mean like actual shocking moments.
I wasn't going to go there, so that's on you.
Look, I saw the opportunity, I went for it.
Well, you kind of jumped ahead of the question a bit, so I'll just ask it now. $50 on this one for Xbox One, what do you think of it?
I absolutely got to give this game a buy it rating. It's incredibly fun. I haven't been this drawn to a review game and played it this much in a while. Like, the last game I think that I generally put this much time into... And you got to remember, I work a lot. So 20 hours within like 4 days, maybe 5 days, is actually a lot of playtime for me.
Yeah, that's a hefty amount of time.
Exactly. The last time I did this was like Sniper Ghost Warrior 3 over a year ago. So I really love this game. And I think that I'm not going to stop playing it. Like, honestly, I wanted to keep postponing the review just so I could find more and more things to talk about that I love about the game.
Well, if another week or two passes and you want to come back on and chat more about it, you're always welcome to do so.
I might have to do that because this game deserves all the love that it's going to get now that it's good. And I, to be fair, I've never played the original. I didn't know how it originally felt to play. And I know that my friend has been with it since day one that I was playing with. He played it on PC originally. And he says, this game doesn't feel like an update. It feels like No Man's Sky 2. It's different completely. So if you hated the original, I still think that you should give this one a chance. Because they turned it around and made it a really great game.
I was just about to ask, do you think that it has finally gotten retribution?
I absolutely think it has. And I've always been one step ahead of you, Joe.
You have, you bastard.
Well.
Dick.
Yeah, so buy this game.
Sounds good. CJ, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
You know, all I want to say is it's kind of weird when you see a sheep with a bird head.
What?
It's a No Man's Sky thing because all animals are randomly generated, just like the planets. So you can see some weird animals out there.
Got it.
Caw-caw!
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Overcooked 2, developed by Ghost Town Games, published by Team 17, released August 7th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $24.99. Overcooked returns with a brand new helping of chaotic cooking action. Journey back to the Onion Kingdom and assemble your team of chefs in classic couch co-op, or finally, online play for up to four players. Hold on to your aprons. It's time to save the world again. Checking this one out, not one, but two lovely, wonderful people, or, well, one wonderful person. The other is Jacob.
I was so expecting that to be like, the other is Cole.
I don't give a crap. Joe called me lovely, so I'll take it.
I said one was lovely, the other is you.
No. You said one was wonderful.
Okay, you got something. Me there.
Yeah, so I'm at least lovely.
Jacob, Cole, how are you two doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
I'm here.
Speaking of dicks.
Hey, we got a family-friendly game. We got to try to keep the dick talk to a minimum.
Oh, sorry.
Despite all the phallic vegetables in the game.
Those cucumbers, though.
So should we clean it up? Should we say, like, pee-pee or something?
Speaking of pee-pees... who wants to lead off Overcooked 2? Who wants to start?
I can. I mean, I got to become a big fan of the first one over the summer when I was playing it at a friend's house. So when I found out that they were making a second one, I messaged Joe and I was just like, holy crap, you know, I have to be the one to review this. So pretty much the game has you moving through this board like the first one, and you know, you have to complete all these assignments, like, or recipes, I should say, as you're moving about these different kitchens that are set up differently. Like, and of course they've got obstacles, they've got different places for everything, and it's, you know, it's obviously going to be chaotic. I spent most of my time playing the single player version, just because I got to play with Cole and her daughter, but, you know, that's a fun story for later.
I thought you were still talking about the first game here.
Oh, no. I'm talking about, no, the second one.
Proud of you.
Thank you. You know, got to play most of it single player. And it does, ideally, you need to play this game with somebody else.
Yeah.
But you can play it by yourself. It's just going, you're just going to make it hell of a lot harder on yourself, and the game does have this mechanic where you can switch in between the chefs, and I don't know if it gives you like slightly more time, but you're not going to make it particularly far if you don't have somebody that you're playing with.
Cole, you did have someone to play with because you have the built-in multiplayer.
Yeah, I co-opted with number one, who was very excited because she played the first one. All my progress in Overcooked 1 is because of her and her friends staying up till 4 a.m. during a sleepover. I didn't get to play it at all. But this one, she actually let me co-op with her. Thanks, kid.
so nice of her to do that.
We actually managed to get through the entire game and 3-star all the levels.
Oh, shit.
So wow. we are hardcore. I think
that's something I can only dream of.
Yeah, I think the fact that it was possible to 3-star all the levels with just the two of us, though, was impressive. Because one of the biggest problems that she complained about with the first one is that even with friends helping her, like, they just did not get all the stars. And she was so aggravated, like, I don't have anybody to help me do this. And then maybe now she'll let me go back and help her. But we were able to do it just the two of us.
Nice. I mean, that's honestly pretty impressive, in my opinion, because I feel like the game definitely needs more than just two, but, you know.
You can definitely tell that some of the levels are designed specifically with four in mind.
Yeah. And then we did start doing online multiplayer. Yeah, I mean, do we want to discuss multiplayer yet?
Or? I mean, that's the beauty of this game. The first game, one of the big complaints was that the co-op was only local. And, for people like me, who doesn't have any real-life friends who get to hang out with them, trying to play that game single-player was just, you know, kind of a nightmare trying to do everything by yourself. This game finally brings 4-player online co-op. I know you two played together. It was, what, the two of you and then number one?
Number one did play with us. So we played as team of three. We played arcade mode mostly that night.
That was all that was connecting at the time.
Yeah, at the time when we were playing, it was pre-release, and so they had invites turned off, so we couldn't invite for story mode, although we did go back and do story mode online with Joe here a little bit ago. But we were playing arcade mode, and then there's also the addition of a versus mode that can be played online, and I played that with number one, where we have two Xboxes, so we were playing that online against each other as well. It's really a whole different experience to play versus mode, a lot harder. But arcade was a really good time because it's still cooperative. And so, like, the whole time, you would have thought we were playing versus with the way that Jacob and number one were yelling at each other. Like, I adopted an extra kid in Jacob and didn't even know I signed the paper.
Cole kept his, like, I have two teenage daughters. Like, and there was a couple of games that ended with daughter number one and I just throwing food at each other.
Yeah.
Nice.
I thought we did pretty well as a team, but
the fun does come in when you guys start bickering, and I think that's part of the fun. It's kind of like Monopoly in that you're having good time with friends, but in the moment you hate each other.
Oh yeah, and it's just and it's constant bickering, and of course, like, you know, you'd think having three people would make things easier, but it almost seems like it just adds a whole new level of difficulty to the game.
Jacob was totally throwing off the synergy where me and number one had played so much of the game already. We were kind of to a point where we didn't need to really communicate. We knew which one of us was going to be doing what. And we were just, like, going to our battle stations and tackling things. And then Jacob is running around throwing rice. And we're like, what?
Stop. I'm just around throwing rice.
Find a fucking corner.
No. All right. No. All right. What I was doing is I was taking care of the dishes because at least, you know, I was doing that. And I was also putting out the fires in the kitchen.
I will give him super credit because he was fantastic at putting out the fires.
There was one game where I, like, that's all I did. I had, because there's one level where it, like, it shoots fire, like, throughout the kitchen, and it just keeps getting worse and worse with each wave. And, like, that whole game, I just ran around with a fire extinguisher just putting out fires while they cooked everything.
The funny thing was we went back to just playing campaign together with number one, And we got to some of those levels that we had played in arcade that we hadn't yet made it to in the story. And that fire was just everywhere. And even number one at one point was like, we kind of need Jacob.
Wow. No, I've never heard those words in my life.
I was gonna say.
Yeah. She was like, we need Jacob to put out the fire.
We thought episode 400 was a landmark. Right? See? Now we actually admit, we do need Jacob for something.
Maybe Jacob has found his calling in life.
Only 400 some episodes of the SML podcast for that to happen.
Yeah, don't get used to it.
It's going to be like another 400 before like somebody says, yeah, we like Jacob. He's all right.
Oh, God willing, I won't be alive by then. Oh man. So how was the online play? Was the connection solid? Were there any drops, any issues?
I thought it was really good. We didn't have any problems. We were running, of course, me and number one were running two Xboxes on wireless connections, you know, in the same house. And then Jacob, wherever the fuck in the world Jacob's at.
I'm out of Pennsylvania with a really
so far away. But yeah. We didn't have any kind of lag. We found each other immediately because, again, we weren't able to send invites at that point. But it was just, it was smooth. It was just like playing if he was in the same room with us. It's with less food being thrown at us, actually.
And a lot more profanity.
No, I think he did a better job of curbing his language.
Your daughter.
Because like, I'm just like, fuck, what the fuck are you doing with the rights? Put the fucking rights down. If people were like around when we're playing Overcooked, then my kids would be taken for emotional abuse.
Should you admit that on the show?
Probably not.
Oh, well, I'm too lazy to edit.
Number one's not even here to be in the background and be like, it's okay, I swear.
Oh, boy. At least it's just words, right?
Right. Totally fine.
Okay. There's not real fire being thrown around.
I didn't throw any Bryce at my 14-year-old. That is Jacob, on the other hand, did. So maybe we need to worry about Jacob.
Jacob, you bastard.
What did I do now?
Everything.
Oh, well, that's fair.
So, content-wise, is there a lot in the game? I know some people might be worried about the $24.99 price tag. Do you think it's justified?
$25 to me is a tad steep on it. I think there is plenty of good content within it. But you also, like... It reminds me a lot of that Mercenary Kings game that we reviewed like a long time ago. Well, it feels like a long time ago. It's a game where you need to have friends who are playing it. And so if it's just you and you're probably only going to be able to do single player, I don't know whether the $25 really cuts it. But like, if you've got friends who like you know that you're definitely going to be able to play this with, and you're going to be playing it quite a bit. It's a fun game to play with friends, like as an alternative to like all the other multiplayer games out there. Like this is a good, like nice party mix. And also like family friendly too.
Unlike this show.
Yeah. to me, the $25 is a tad steep, but, I think it's a really fun game and I think you should check it out.
What do you think, Cole?
I think the $25 price tag is fine. There are 40 levels just for the campaign. You're going to be replaying them. There is high replay because there are secret bonus levels. This is my biggest complaint when I get to
those bonus levels.
Not even the difficulty. Like, I was fine with the difficulty. Complaint about... somebody to
play with, though.
Yeah. Playing those alone is probably a nightmare.
Like the thing is, I expected... let me just butt in real quick on this. With the bonus and the secret level stuff, like on world one, I was expecting it to be like at world one difficulty, and that thing just ramped up other. Yeah, no, it definitely isn't. That was my issue with it. And back to you, Cole.
They're clearly meant to be in game. or, you know, like in-game levels. The thing that bothered me about them, though, is that the requirements to unlock them are hidden, which is fine when you're doing your initial playthrough. But I feel like once you've gotten 3 stars, the least they could do is like have something pop up on a loading screen or something and tell you what your extra objective is. Otherwise, you're just replaying over and over. Like, me and number one have spent so much time trying to unlock all those levels. We have like 2.
Wow.
And that's because it's like, okay, first you've got to figure out which level it's the secret levels are attached to. Because only performing the objective in a certain level will unlock a certain hidden level. And then you have no idea what it actually is, what the objectives are. So you play it once and you'll be like, okay, well, let's try making sure we get all of the orders in the order they're received. Then it's like, don't miss any of the orders or play the whole level without anybody falling off a platform. You're just sitting there calling out arbitrary possible objectives to try to figure out what it is.
Well, the first one on world one, I can't remember, because a lot of this, like, part of my issue with it was that early when we got our review copies, the achievements weren't listed. Now they would unlock when you did them, except for that emote one, which I still have yet to get.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, I know. It won't unlock for me for some reason. But the world one, that was just throwing switches, wasn't it? Like, it just threw it at you. Like, you know, here's a secret one, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But then the other ones after that have not been so easy. Okay.
Because I was going to say, like, it was just like, I remember, like, and I know it's because we got a preview version. It was just like the game doesn't explain itself with some of the stuff nearly as well. And the fact that, like, I couldn't figure, like, I had no idea what the achievements were, and, you know, here it was like a lot of like, here's hoping for the best.
Yeah.
You know,
but that's one of the things you mentioned, the switches unlocking the one hidden level. We have the achievement for hitting all of the switches, but we only have that one hidden level because of it. The other one unlocked when we did a random level without getting any of the orders out of line. We did them all in the order they were received. So yeah. That's the one like arbitrary thing we were trying out that unlocked that one. And then there was another one where we did it where we didn't fall off of platforms. So it's just like, it's totally random arbitrary guidelines, you know, requirements for the objectives, but they don't ever tell you what it is. No. And it's like, it feels like forced replay. Like, okay, I really just want to finish. I've got all the stars. All I can do are the Kevin levels now.
All I want is to just figure out how the fuck to get to them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It would be just as simple as like, okay, well, you've already got all 3 stars. Ta-da, here's your objective now.
You know? That would make sense.
So it's that's really like my one and only complaint with the game.
Well, then overall, $25 on this one. What are your verdicts?
Absolutely buy it.
Jacob?
I don't know. As I said, 25. Like, I mean, here's the thing. I really like the game. I think it's solid. I don't know that it, like, for me, I don't know that it's $25 solid. Like, I'd probably put it at like 15, 20 thereabouts. But I really enjoy it. As I said, I really enjoyed it, and I highly recommend it. So
it definitely seems like something that if you have friends to play, it's much more of a must buy than if you don't have friends to play with.
Exactly. And like, as I said, like I reference back to that Mercenary Kings game where it's just like, if you've got the friends who are gonna play this, then absolutely, totally go for it. But if it's just you, you might want to wait for a sale.
Sounds good. Well, Cole, Jacob, thank you both for coming on and chatting about Overcooked. Do either of you have any final words to wrap it up?
Put down the fucking rice, Jacob.
Listen, I'm the one who's putting out the fires, and I'm the one who's cleaning all the plates. You need me, so whatever. You couldn't have done it without me.
All right, to keep on with the theme of the craziness this episode, Pernell Vaughn, you're here. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm eating Chickie's Pizza, drinking Diet Pepsi, and sweating. How are you?
I had some beef jerky, some Mountain Dew, and I am also sweating.
Yeah, for food sweats.
No, just heat sweats.
That is true, but I was trying to convince myself that this was food related, thereby I'd be happy about it.
Got the pizza sweats going on.
That's right. It's Chickie's pizza too, which makes me very happy.
I don't know what that is. Ages.
It is a local brand that opened up here. It used to be a place called Extreme Pizza, which is actually a small chain. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it goes, they lost the licensing or whatever. It's like, okay, we'll just brand it with our own name and use some of the stuff. So mm-hmm. It's the same pieces, but with different naming conventions, and they're still really good. But they're all weird pieces. Like, one I usually get has, like, tandoori chicken, like, green onions, like, ginger root, and, like, two other things. And their version of the Hawaiian has mandarin oranges, pineapple, bacon, and something else. And then the mozzarella cheese. And people think it's gross by hearing about it, but it's freaking good. It's enough to make, that's why I love when people go, pineapples have no place on the pizzas, like, but with mandarin oranges, yes, it does.
That sounds weird.
It is. That's why it's great. It's the closest I've ever come to a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle pizza spot. Which, for the record, I still think needs to exist someday. It doesn't have to be some of the weirdest shit they did, like freaking garbanzo beans and marshmallow. But I feel like they had something going there. But everyone got scared off by their most disgusting concoctions. There is room in the world for TMNT-type pieces. That, in fact, I'll go further and say that is the next step of evolution in pizza cuisine. It has to happen.
See, as a kid, I actually tried pepperoni and marshmallow, and it wasn't that bad.
Actually, it sounds like it could be sweet and savory.
Mm-hmm. It worked. See,
I would try that. You did like cheese and tomato paste, though, or did you go with like a white pizza or a graham cracker or something?
It was just like a normal pepperoni pizza with marshmallows, because we had marshmallows sitting around. I'm like, oh, I'm a Ninja Turtle fan. Let me try this.
It's like, now. So now you got to eat it again as an adult and see if it sticks. No longer a teenage mutant. You're an adult male. It could work.
I'll have to make sure to get Pizza Hut pizza to keep it authentic to the Ninja Turtles and their movie tie-in deals.
Yes. A little bit of Toka and Rezar action there. Like, yeah. Right, I was talking about that today. We're resurrecting 90s style Pizza Hut, complete with Book It program and the old slogan, making it great, and all that good stuff. God, I miss Pizza Hut. Remember, they were the top dog of pizza. Top dog.
Once upon a dream.
Yeah, and now I'm not even sure who is, because it's sure as fuck not Papa John's. And
Papa John's.
Domino's is going south. They're like, we got dirtier crust now. We put garlic powder on it. Thereby, it's better. Like, no, now it's just filthier. I can't eat this properly without getting all over the floor. And then there's what other major chains are there? It's like Grotto's, but I think that's local for us.
CeCe's.
Yeah, CeCe's, I think, is another local chain, because I don't hear about them too much.
And I'm pretty sure CeCe's is national.
National chain?
Pretty sure, because I've had them down in Arkansas, I've had them in Pennsylvania, had them in Virginia. So CeCe's is around.
So that might be, that's the SML question of the week. What names of currently existing national pizza chains that you can think of? Because damn sure we forgot most of them, because they seem to have disappeared.
Chuck E. Cheese, motherfucker.
They don't count. Chuck E. Cheese. I don't know what to make of that place anymore. Oh, mercy.
But, oh, man. Craziness aside, we have some games to talk about. Should we get started?
Let's get down to business.
We're going
to
have fun. We're starting off with a tabletop RPG called Tales from the Loop, released by Modiphius Games, starting at $25.99 for a PDF rulebook, all the way up to $91.99 for a full-on starter kit with a hardbound, is it hardcover?
The hardcover. Hardcover.
There you go. Hardcover comes with a dice set, comes with a DM screen. It's got a whole bunch of goodies with it for $91.99. Step into the alternate 80s universe created by sci-fi artist Simon Stalenhag in this retro RPG in the vein of E.T. and Stranger Things. Purnell, what is Tales from the Loop?
I'm going to tell you something here. I know the reviewer will, probably the creator of this will probably be listening to this, so I think he might want to hear this little tidbit. So, we've had this review on hand, like these items on hand to do this review for a little while now, but I was kind of deterred by virtue of the fact that while I am familiar with tabletop, I've never really done much with it as an as the administrator or the game master, or thought about it as a game master. So I kept thinking I wasn't going to do it justice, and I was trying to get people together, couldn't pull it off, blah, blah, blah. But then something clicked. I could review this for the atmosphere in the world, because tabletop RPGs are tabletop RPGs. Mm-hmm. But if you do, but what draws you to even want to do them is the atmosphere and the universe that's being created for the players to explore. And based on that, I and two of my friends actually looked over these materials together, and we came away with an interesting take on them. And what that is that this mess is fucking awesome. So the idea is that Joe already mentioned earlier, it is meant to be sort of like a throwback to like the classic 80s era of, you know, 80s music, 80s dress, and the universes that surrounded them. But this is a bit of an alternate 1980s sort of structure, where the idea is that you live in a world where there is a thing called the Loop, which is a underground particle accelerator that exists not too far from your home. And by the fact that this thing exists, strange and crazy things have happened in your area, your hometown, or your setting, which results in the types of mysteries that we can resolve. And unlike a lot of other RPGs at the tabletop, whereas you're like, I'm a mobster, or I'm a gangster, or I am a grown person. And this, you were all children. Everyone's a kid, ranging from the ages of 10 to 15 years old. And you solve mysteries together. There are very specific rules in place that are always in place, no matter what mystery setup you go with, which is that I'm going to read these verbatim. Your hometown is full of strange and fantastic things. Everyday life is dull and unforgiving. Adults are out of reach and out of touch. The land of the Loop is dangerous, but kids will not die. The game is played scene by scene, and the world is described collaboratively. So, obviously, those last three are related to the game specifically, but the other three sound like pretty much how I felt my 1980s youth was, too, outside of playing video games and the like. So, it's interesting. The way this works is that when you start the game up, everyone, well, as the players anyway, you have to create children, or as they call them in the game, just kids. And the kids have a number of different class types. If you think like D&D, how there's like the typical like archer or mage or whatever. And this, they have 80s archetypes. You have a bookworm, you have the computer geek, weirdos, jocks, popular kids, and rockers, and others, up to a total of 8. And each of those kids has their own specific key skills that factor into the game. Like the computer geek can do programming, he can comprehend things, he can calculate stuff. Whereas the weirdo is really sneaky, he can investigate things, and he's an empath, so empathetic. So when you think of a tabletop RPG and you hear those different skills, they factor into how you handle problems. So if you come across a situation where a person may, be struggling with like dealing with specific problems, and they're lashing out at the team because of it, the empath might be able to empathize with their problems and calm them down, and reduce the conflict remove the conflict entirely, things like that. And of course, you roll dice based on the way the characters are built out, because you take those different buffs and you take the age. This is where it gets interesting too. So all those different classifications and skills have numbers allocated to them, and those numbers are determined by the age of the child. You take the age, and that total is the number of skill points you can allocate out, and you can give 1 to 5 across all the different skill stats that the character can have, which would, of course, involve those different key traits and other little tidbits, too. So you have, like, obviously, those things there. You have, the body type. You have your tech skill, your heart skill, and your mind ability. And then your basic skills, like I mentioned earlier, the programming, calculation, and tinkering and stuff like that. So when you do that, and then you have to utilize those skills in a situation, the skill level determines how many dice you roll. And depending on how well you do with the dice roll, that determines whether or not you succeed at the mission, succeed really well at it, fail, or fail miserably. And honestly, it's interesting how this played out, because there are scenarios that get factored into this. And I probably really need to go back and mention one other thing before that, which is probably the most important thing, which is what scenarios am I freaking talking about that you need to use these kids in to engage? And the answer is, they're created by the game master. Game master being the player who is not a kid, but the person overseeing the adventure as a whole. And if you are not familiar with being a game master in general on these sorts of games, it can seem rather overwhelming, I would think. Have you ever engaged in something like this? attempted to be a game master in any game?
I have never tried being a game master or dungeon master or anything like that. I've had very limited tabletop experience, and it usually always devolved into 3 hours of making characters, 5 minutes of playing, and then repeat.
Well, in this game, they thankfully do make it a lot easier, so the 3 hour thing shouldn't even be an issue. It should probably get done within an hour max.
No, it was intentional.
Oh, everybody just goofing off, like hanging out and chatting and like, oh, I'm going to make my guy super powered with the ability to chug, you know, Gatorade at a moment's notice for super strength. In this game, the game master is actually given quite a bit of material with which to work with and create their atmosphere. Because one thought that I had about this game was, if I were to ever try to be a game master and play this game with my friends, though admittedly, the third person, my friend's son, jumped at the desire to be a game master, so he is going to be DMing our game, and I am happy with that. He can nice. Do that shit. But if I had to do it, fortunately, the materials that he gives you with this game make it very, very freaking easy to get started. I would call this a very good beginner's guide to being a DM. Because what he does with his materials is there are two books that I got with my setup. I got the Role Playing in the 80s That Never Was, which is the Tales from the Loop guide. It's how to play the game, and it sets the universe up for you. So what it does is, using very detailed art and very good descriptions, it gives you a layout of the atmosphere of the world. So the primary structure is the 80s, and it's in Sweden or the United States. He created two base worlds or cities that exist within these two areas, and it's designed so that you can go with whichever city atmosphere you want. So if you want to work with Sweden, if you're overseas and you want to work with Sweden, you got a Swedish atmosphere. If you're in the States, you want to work with the United States, so they have like a Colorado city that you can work with. But the beauty of it is, if you're in America, why not use the Swedish one? Because he gives you tons of information to make the atmosphere authentic. Top 80s hit songs that were on the charts. He gives you descriptions of all these different locations you can make use of in the respective cities. He even teaches you how to create your own default city. He gives you a number of key components and details. Say, if you want to make your hometown an atmosphere for a stage, go with these details. Utilize these things. Boom, you have a world that you can go with. And that's only if you want to go free flow. Like if you want to come up with your own story and world and stuff. Yeah. He gives you those details. But let's just say, again, you're new at this whole MGAB, but you really like the idea of trying to do a DMing session, but you don't quite know what to do. He gives you a good number of default starting scenarios. Between these two books being the starter guide and also Our Friends, the Machines, and Other Mysteries, he gives you a good quantity, I'd say like 6 to 8 or more, default starting mysteries that you can kind of dive into and work with. So I wrote down like two examples of ones being Our Friends of the Machines, where the story is that the loop has caused toys to become sentient, and they are basically on a rampage through your town. And you have like a good environment you have set up there where you can like say there's like multiple locations that you can go through and explore with there being a specific goal to stop the rampage. I don't want to say too much because obviously the DM would want to read this and prep his story with it in mind.
Yeah.
But it's rampaging toys. There is one called Horror Movie Mayhem, which I actually think was probably one of my favorite ones I read, where the PTA chairman is brainwashing town citizens through subliminal advertising to create her ideal utopia, but kids are immune to this. So you're trying to stop the PTA chairman from pretty much usurping and taking over using her crazy mind powers. The powers that have been used by such powerful figures as Zach Morse and Saved by the Bell. And there was actually one really cool one that I thought was awesome, too. It's a series of many mysteries. I think we all, three of us, agree that this was really cool. It's a set of multiple mysteries. It's called The Mixtape of Mysteries. And it's like 8 mini stories that you can play around with. But they're all themed around top hits from the 80s. Like Sweet Dreams Were Made of These, or Girls Just Want to Have Fun, and Heaven is a Place on Earth. I just named a few of them. But there's other ones besides those. So the stories are all themed around those. Like Sweet Dreams revolves dream-stealing robots that escaped. Oh, sorry, robots that escaped from a facility that want to become human. So they are trying to become human by stealing dreams and learning from humans based on the stolen dreams, which has a weird adverse effect on the adults in town, because by not getting much sleep and losing their dreams, they're actually lashing out and doing crazy things like attacking each other and stuff. So, of course, the kids have to stop this weird dream-stealing phenomena and save the day. So it's just, there's a lot of really cool stories in these books. And I like the idea behind the fact that, one, like, the kids can't die. They're meant to actually be, they're meant to explore and have fun. They can be like incapacitated or just outright fail the story based on how they perform against the game master and the scenario that he prepped for them. But they're not meant to die. It's more just like kids having an adventure. So sort of like the Goonies in the sense that, yeah, they probably could have died if it was like a rated R movie. But since it was a rated PG movie, the worst that was happening to them was like, well, the Fratellis tied them up and they were captured. Oh, no. You know, stuff like that. You know, so I think that I get the same vibe from this and the fact that he wanted you to have that youthful adventure exploration. So, I mean, they can definitely get hurt, though, based on the way that some of these scenarios, because like some of the people come at you with like weaponry and you have to figure out how to deal with the weapons and how to, you know, disarm them and whatever like that. But let me think. It's hard. I'm actually rambling. So at this point, I almost want to throw you. Do you have any questions about this game that I might not have touched on?
Nah, it sounds like this sounds like a pretty solid tabletop beginner kit for people who are both experienced with tabletop games and those who are just new to the whole scene to begin with.
Yeah, I was asking about this. I'm glad you said it because I was worried you were going to start with beginners because this is definitely a good setup for like experts too, because he gives you the world, but then once and you definitely should utilize the starter mysteries he's created because they're awesome. There's some awesome mysteries in there. But even after that, if you like this enough, you have more than enough information to say, I'm going to go rogue on this and start making my own stories now too, based on this universe. And you can come up and use your own towns that you want to go with. You can create your own damn town and go nuts. Oh, one very important detail that we all agreed on was a very nice thing he included in this. So as a game master, one of the things that you would ultimately have to do is draft how the scenario is going to flow. Where are you going to adventure to? What gets you from point A to point B, and what is required to end the adventure? He gives a pretty detailed example on how to go about constructing that concept, that idea. And in his stories in here that he gives you, he actually creates flow charts to actually show you how you should be able to traverse the atmosphere, the areas too. So let's say, for example, think about like grade school when you were learning how to write a paper. And it was always started like the top. It was like, okay, you start with an idea. Boom. So in the case of a tabletop game, that idea would be like just like a default location, like the arcade. The kids are all hanging out at the arcade. Some weird shit goes down at the arcade. Now what? At this point, you know that you need to make the kids go somewhere, but how do they get there? You know that there's clues that are hidden in the arcade. And then from there, it shows the flow chart pointing to different locations. Like, okay, from the arcade, they can either go to grandma's candy shop, or they can go to the school, or they can go to, you know, one of the kids' houses. And then from there, it tells you what clues would be needed to go from here to, you know, either the final location or to the next location or whatever. But it pretty much gives you a very detailed layout in a very easy to read manner, how to determine where to go and how to get the locations and when to unlock the final area of the adventure. So if you're not good at writing scenarios out, he does a good job of laying that out for you so you can learn how to do it first from the ones he's got for specific stories in the book and then how to do it yourself.
That's pretty awesome.
It really is. Just making sure you do know what I was talking about when I said that, right? Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear it because I'm actually slightly nervous because this is like, again, this is the first time we've ever done a tabletop review. I'm not used to that sort of thing.
Well, but overall, it sounds pretty awesome. So I got to know, starting at $26, if people just want to get the PDF rule book and print it out on their own or, you know, print out what they want, what do you think of this? Is this something that tabletop fans should look into?
Oh, God, yes. Like, if this is a matter of getting the PDF to actually learn how to utilize the atmosphere that this guy's created, it's worth every damn penny. Because, again, when it comes to that, the idea is that you take his guide, you take the universe that he's created, and you can write multiple tales and stories based around that. So $24.99 is a small price to pay for a great environment that you can have multiple adventures in for who knows how long. There's more bang in this than some of the video games we review.
Yeah, and there's a whole bunch of different options that you could buy. Just the rule book, the hardcover rule book by itself is $46. that our friends in the Machines and Other Mysteries book is 33. They have the map available for 20. There's just a whole bunch of different stuff that you could get and different options that you could check out at modifius.net. The link will be in the description. But we have more games. It's been a fucking hour in this show, and we've gone through three reviews.
Also, I don't want to forget this. This book, and I didn't even realize this until while we were talking about it, too. He earned this thing one in any. And apparently the Annie is a very prominent award for tabletop gaming and like everything that goes along with it. Like, so it says it actually won best game, best setting, and I can agree with that. That setting is shit. Best interior art, and interior art would be the pictures that are inside the book itself used to actually give you a feeling for what you're getting into, which I didn't even touch on, but the artwork in this is really good too. I was actually going through it, flipping through it, and actually, you know, looking at the pictures and not ignoring them for the sake of the guide. I was actually looking at this content. Best writing and product of the year.
Damn.
And it earns that shit. It is really good. I am swearing. The Gen Con Ian World RPG Award. I just looked that up. Damn. There you go.
That's pretty good.
It deserves it. This is a good game. And I can tell you right now, it's going to get played. I am going to be a rocker.
Nice.
That's my character class.
You ready to move on to some normal Vidya games?
No, let's talk more about Tales from the...
We can't. We have more show to take care of. Like I said, it's been over an hour, and we've literally gone through three reviews.
Oh, good point. One last thing, though. It does have the optional dice that you can buy for the game, too. Admittedly, the dice, they're $20. I will say, at least for the dice, maybe not so necessary because they look cool and they are thematic, but they are pretty much six-sided die. And for what I could gather, they didn't seem to, I didn't picture them doing a great deal of difference. It's just one through six sided die. So they're nice. If you want to go all in and go bonkers, get the full set, go for it. But if you're trying to save money, but you want as much as you could probably forego the dice, but get everything else.
Sounds good. Well, next game to talk about. God damn it, Purnell.
Now I'm done.
God damn it, Purnell. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Flat Heroes, developed by Parallel Circles, published by Deck 13, released August 2nd for $7.99 on Steam, $9.99 on the Switch. Flat Heroes encourages you to stylishly navigate and survive over 300 handcrafted levels, destroy the most epic bosses around, and truly be the two-dimensional hero or heroes you've always dreamed you could be. Purnell, were you the hero you've always dreamed you could be?
I think I'd say I'm still in training to become that hero. But I will say this, worth starting out on. So this is another one of those games where you're probably on your Switch and you just go to the Nintendo eShop and you're perusing the ridiculous number of options available to you on there these days. Mm-hmm. And you see a game called Flat Heroes, which has a number of little squares on it, and it looks very minimalist and bland, and you kind of figure, I'll scroll past. I'm sure there's something better out there, like Beast Boost or something. I don't know. But you would regret that decision, I think, if you are a fan of arena platforming, because this game surprised me in a way that it kept me from. And keep in mind, when I say it kept me away, I'm not saying because I had to do the review. The game, I can do the review very easily in this game with not as much time as I put into it. But it kept me away from stuff like Octopath Traveler and Darkest Dungeon and Lost Fear because I wanted to play Flat Heroes. Flat Heroes is great. It is, you are basically controlling a colored square, and you go through a series of worlds. Each world has 11, 12 or so stages in it. And every time you start one up, you're approached with obstacles. There'll be a series of platforms. Sometimes the floor will be made of lava in the sense that if you touch it, you'll die. And things will happen, and you have to not be killed by them. Lasers might start shooting from the top of the screen. Like, you might see like a sequence of like pew, 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 pew bullets start appearing and then shooting downward or leftward or rightward or upward. And you have to avoid all the laser beam or bullets. Sometimes you'll see like lasers shooting off the walls, like ricocheting all over the place, like showing you a line for sniper sight. And then the bullet will pass through, and you have to not be touching the line when the bullet passes through. Sometimes, like, landmines will just appear and start chasing you around the screen. And more. There's a lot of crazy shit that happens. Sometimes together, and you are tasked with evading all of it. You can evade by running, jumping, double jumping, and air dashing. And that is all you can do. Sounds boring? It's not. It's actually very enjoyable. And it's got that you die, get right back in it, and try again thing that I love so much in games like Super Meat Boy. It's honestly a great joy. I do, oddly enough, like the fact that this game does not, I repeat, does not have a 3-star rating for stages.
Yay.
You just beat the fucker and move on. None of that shit. You just keep moving on. And ever at the end of every world, there is a boss. And when I say boss, I'm not saying, you know, stomp him 3 times and he'll die, because you can't actually attack these bosses. You're just trying to outlast them or make them beat themselves up in a way that kills them. I'll go with the first 2 bosses, for example, so I'm not going too detailed in it. So the first boss is an orb that has, you know, shields in front of it, and it just basically dashes around the screen and tries to collide with you directly. If you make it collide into a wall, each time a shield will come down, and then the final collision, it'll just blow up into a series of smaller balls, which will then blow up and die once they collide with walls. But each time it loses a shield, it gets faster and more aggressive. So you're basically dashing and dashing quicker and freaking out in a little panic to not get hit by this stupid thing. And then the next boss is something out of like the old game Snake, where it has a really long line following it, and its nose is trying to crash into you. And the line doesn't hurt you, but it prevents you from moving. And the idea is you have to make it crash into its own line while not letting it trap you and killing you. It's surprisingly fun. It's a lot of fun. I'm not trying to 3-star things. I'm just trying to fucking survive. And sometimes you'll go to a level, it'll go start, and you'll go, what does it want me to do? Oh, shit! And everything will start popping up. It's like, run, jump, jump, dash, dash! And, oh, you can also wall grab. You can hug the walls. So you'll be doing that a lot, too. There's a number of levels where like you'll have to like time how long you hold on to a specific spot of the wall and then bounce off like a ninja. It's enjoyable. I really like this game.
Do you have any gripes with it, or is it just all good?
Honestly, it's all good. Like I can't think of anything. The only thing I would say, if anything, I wish there was like different backgrounds or something, like cosmetic shit. But as far as the game goes, it gives me what I want. There's 300 stages, like you said. I have plenty more to do. And when I'm done 300 levels, I don't think I'm going to want any more. Who's to say I'm even going to want to do all 300? Which in its own right means if I can get through 40 of these stages or 60 of these stages, I got my money's worth to me.
Nice.
And there's 300 total. Womp.
Damn. Keeps you busy.
It does. It's just a genuinely good game. It's a good pick-up-and-play game. I hate saying filler game. That's something I learned from board games lately. I was going to say it, though, but it could almost be considered a good filler game. Like if you're like, you've been playing a lot of like, you know, deeper games that take forever, all of your time up, but you just want to cleanse your palate and dive into something that you can play for like an hour or 30 minutes or 15 hours, whatever your choice. Flat Heroes would fill that void very easily.
Nice. So $10 on the Switch, $8 on Steam. What do you think of it?
Worth every damn penny on either console, honestly. Use some of those Nintendo gold points and bring it down a bit if you need to.
I miss when the gold points were actually used for rewards.
I do too, though I will say I'm not too averse to them being outright discounts on games either. Like, if I had to take a concession, I'm glad that it's like, just get money off of your stuff. Like, okay, I can work with that. But I do miss getting my Hanafuda cards and my Luigi statues just the same.
Yeah, I miss them too.
But someday, who knows, maybe they'll snap out of it sometime in the line and go, you know what, guys? We're bringing it back! Nintendo's nice. Back in POG form!
Dude, years ago, I was so mad when I tried redeeming my coupons in the Nintendo Power Rewards catalog for Earthbound POGs, and they were sold out.
I didn't even know they had Earthbound POGs, and now I'm sad about that.
Mm-hmm. Scratch and Sniff, too, if I remember correctly.
Oh, I would have been all over those. I remember the Scratch and Stink cards in the strategy guide.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm sad. I missed out on a great thing. It would have gone well with it. I still have that whole box and manual and stuff upstairs, too.
Damn. I am jealous.
Well, honestly, if it makes you feel any better, I did kind of fuck up back in the day, because I actually had 2 of them. I bought them back before they became all stupid priced, and I sold one to a friend for $30.
Damn. Because
I really wanted Earthbound. I said, you're my buddy. Here, you can have it. And then a couple years later, it's worth how much money? What'd you do with the game? Oh, I threw the box and the strategy guide away because I don't want to have that clutter.
You son of a bitch.
You piece of shit. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's what made me mad. I wouldn't even have been mad if he just... I was like, hey, you got a good deal for me. This fucker threw the box and the strategy guide in the trash.
That's not a friend.
It's just sad. I understood why he did it, and it's still wrong.
Oh, Lord. Well, if you ever sell the other one, let me know.
Will do. I'll have to be unemployed and eating SpaghettiOs, not even the full can, like half a can for a meal. And
I was going to say, also, don't go shitting on SpaghettiOs. I still eat them.
Oh, I love SpaghettiOs. I'm saying ration them out. When I'm rationing SpaghettiOs, you know, and possibly stepping on ticks because I can't afford to clean my house. And, you know, also my hair is falling out and I have to pay for like some kind of weird dental surgery for myself. And, you know, calcium deficiencies, all those things. And I need some money. I'll look you up for my Earthman.
Sounds good. It's a deal. But one final game with you to talk about is called Zeek or Zick. I still don't know. Z-I-Q. So
I keep calling it Dick, so you're better than me. I don't know why I'm doing that, but it's like D-I-X. No, it's not.
No, it's Z-I-Q. There's, you have one letter in common there. That's it.
Three is like the guy I'm afraid to spell the. He was misspelled the word the every day. All the time. How do you misspell the? It's right there.
Oh, man. Anyway, Zeek, developed by Midnight Sea Studios, published by 3D Realms, released August 1st on Steam for $9.99. Run, dodge, jump, pull pickup, switch polarity, and die constantly. You get to do all this while being heckled for your constant mistakes. Zeek is an arcade runner that features polarity switching gameplay. Switch Zeek's polarity to make it safely past obstacles, or in some cases, destroy them. Brunel, what is this game?
I think this is another one of those cases where you just described the entire game.
Nice.
You think I'm joking, but I'm dead serious. That is the game. You are this little weird, like, beetle-looking thing, and the idea is that you are running endlessly through a stage. If you don't press anything, you run up the middle column. If you hold left, you go on the left column. Hold right, you take the right column. When you're running, there is a bar at the top of the screen that indicates a series of colors. Those colors could be either blue or orange. Those are equivalent to the polarities that you can turn into. And when you switch polarities, you can do a variety of different things. You can basically, there's like jump pads where if you're matching the polarity, you can rocket across chasms. There are gates that show up. And if you're not the right color, you will die when you collide with the gate. Also, there's the floor will actually change color too. So the floor might become orange and you need to become orange to run across the floor. So the things I mentioned above, in addition to being just the colors that you can turn into, there are also orbs that'll show up throughout the course. And you want to change your polarity, which when you change polarity, the orbs change color to match your polarity. And you want to be the color of the orb at the top of the screen and then press the polarity button to pull the orb to you as you run past it. And as you do that, you'll fill in the sequence at the top. So if it says orange, blue, orange, for example, you want to be orange to pick up an orange ball, blue to pick up a blue ball, and then orange to pick up another orange ball. If you do all those together, your chain will increase, which will give you a higher score combo potential. And also, if you do enough of those, because the combinations get more lengthy and complicated, if you do enough, you'll go into overcharge mode, which will occasionally allow you to blow through an obstacle that is the matching color that you are. So it's sort of like a, hey, that wall's going to kill me. Fuck it. Blow it up. Just run right through. As least the tutorial told me, because I suck too much and never pulled that off. This game is actually pretty hard. For having so little going on, there's a lot to do. For having so little to do, there's a lot going on at once. Because as you're running, you are dodging left, right, and center to avoid walls. You are going left, right, center to hit the jump pads while being the matching color. You're also jumping over pits, and you're also trying to collect the polarity orbs to match the sequence at the top of the screen, which, by the way, the sequence orbs are very small. So you actually kind of have to, it's the equivalent of like if you're driving in a car and you're trying to text somebody in your lap, or not even text, if you're just trying to read a text in your lap while driving a car.
Which you shouldn't do, by the way. We should point that out.
Which you should not do. SML does not support texting or reading and driving. But if you were to do that, it would be just like Plague Dicks. I mean, Zick. Or it would be like that. Because you're focusing so hard on the run, but you kind of have to pull your eyes away to look up, even for a split second, to catch the next orb combination you want to hit. So it might be like, hey, I need to memorize the next three. Look, memorize, come back in. And you're doing all of that and trying to process all that and keep it all in line without dying. You get three lives, and once they're shot, that's the end of your run. You take your score, and it hits the leaderboards. And your hope, your goal for the game is just to climb leaderboards. There is no, like, at least
it's all about score chasing.
Yeah, like, don't quote me. Maybe there's a freaking ender that I just never reached because I suck. But I believe it's pure score chasing, with the goal being to beat everybody else. So think like how Temple Run used to be, those old like cell phone like Endless Runner games where you just kind of got the coins, chose the paths, and then hoped to not die. Zick is exactly that in the scope. It's just living as long as you can, juking as the game gets more complicated and it starts throwing more and more of the same stuff at you in different combinations and orders, all intent on getting that beast score.
Nice. So $10 on this one. What do you think?
I'd say it's a try it. At least if you like Endless Runners, but if you're not a fan of Endless Runners or being a score chaser specifically, I'd say deny it, because I'm speaking from the perspective of a person who generally likes to progress through games he plays. When you don't have that progression sometimes, once you get past the whole, like, yay, you got a high score, what's next? You get a higher score. What is this, the 80s? Whoa, that's Tales from the Loop. By the way, Tales from the Loop, you can let me stop. But
it's a God tough damn it, thing. Pernell.
You knew I was going back to that. But yeah, like, I think you can relate to me when I say that too. It's just that sense that sometimes you're not the type of person that wants to be a score chaser. You want to actually play for beginning, middle, and end of something.
Yeah, well, and this isn't the game for that.
Exactly. So if that's not your shtick, I would not go with this. But if you are down for Endless Runner score chasing, I think this is a pretty quality one, and it's not easy. It's quite challenging.
Awesome. Sounds good.
I hope it did, because I was real nervous that whole time.
Pernell, it is always good having you on, chatting about games and chatting about the weather. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it up?
So in Tales from the Loop, you can...
Oh, God damn it.
I just had to do it one more time. Tales from the Loop has excellent artwork. But no, it was a great time being on the show, and thanks for having me.
All right, finally tonight, the Inner World series has finally launched on the Nintendo Switch, and here to talk about it, Chris Taylor, how are you doing?
Doing great. Just enjoying this million-degree weather.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
A beautiful summertime where it's 120 degrees at night.
Yeah, it's not that hot up at my area, but the fact that we have an air conditioner in our bedroom and it's still hot is wrong.
Yes. No, that's wrong anywhere.
It's so. Just, it hurts. It hurts my soul.
I know. The soul's where all your things are kept.
Yeah. Oh, no. The heat is making us delirious.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been whiling away the hot summer nights by playing point-and-click puzzle games.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
So we should probably dive into them, huh? Because there's two of them to talk about. The first one is just called The Inner World, developed by Studio Fizbin, published by Head Up Games, released August 2nd on the Switch for $11.99. Together with the help of the mysterious thief Laura, his best intentions, and no clue whatsoever, Robert sets off on his adventure to discover the secret of the Wind's disappearance. Will the young adventurer be able to save his world? Chris, was he able to save his world, or is the appearance of a sequel kind of a sign of things to come?
Well, actually, the answer is complicated, I can safely say. It's not quite a cookie-cutter ending, which is probably why it's good that there's two games that came out at the same time. The Inner World is a really interesting point-and-click puzzle game in the tradition... Oh, hi, Kitty.
Kitty.
Yeah. In the tradition of the, I think it's what you would call like the, there's two camps of point and click adventures. And basically one of them is where you try to fiddle with things and then get killed, like, just constantly, like your King's Quests and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are games that there's, I guess it's like Secret of Monkey Island, but I would, because I've just played it more, I would say Discworld, where you gather up all these random little items and then click on everything to try and combine it to solve puzzles that are ludicrous and make no sense to anybody. And this game is the latter, I'm happy to say, because I actually prefer this type of game, because it's very much about playing with super abstract, like, just stuff that's just entirely stupid. So, the setting of the world is a really cool fantastical setting where basically the entire universe is inverted. So if you look up, there's the ground, and you're also on the ground. It's just all a sphere of dirt. And so the only way that the people inside, who are they're kind of personish, kind of molish, kind of, I don't know, somebody said Rick and Morty-ish, but the people inside, who are all quaint and British, subsist on air that is funneled in through these vents, and what's happened is that the wind stopped blowing, and instead has appeared these creatures called basilisks, which are spelled a little bit differently, but we know what they are, that are coming up and turning people into stone, and we don't like that. So the world basically falls under, they basically turn to religion because there's this guy called Conroy who is the only one who can stop these worms. And he says that it's as long as everybody's obedient and does whatever, whatever, quote unquote, the church says, then the worms won't come up and turn them into stone. And, you know, so this is Mr. Not the Bad Guy at all. And, his adopted ward is Robert, who is your character for the whole game. And Robert is a wonderful protagonist. I really like him because he's dumb. He is so dumb. And yet he has this kind of innocent, like, sort of making fun of things by way of not understanding them. So it's like that kind of humor, which I really enjoy. And yeah, you guide Robert all the way through. The game gives you a little bit of a tutorial mission in that you have to basically a pigeon eats an item that belongs to Conroy. And so you basically get kicked into the sewer to go after it. And you end up on a city street and you have to figure out a way to get the pigeon who is pecking at a dead fish on a landing. And so you have to find everything around you and basically make a slingshot and, you know, take him down. And so, like, it's like 10, 15, 20 layers of, like, things that you have to do and combine and things that have to react to each other in order for you to get the items that you want. So a lot of the game, like, 99% of it is going to be clicking on everything and just seeing what happens. And that, to some people, is very frustrating. That to me is very interesting. So that is really going to be the kind of person who's going to be into this kind of game, is the person who wants to do that. Now, because this is a modern game, it has a wonderful innovation that is a free and endless hint system.
Yay!
I know. It basically makes the game for people who don't want to sit there racking their brains over stupid things. So you push one of the left shoulder button, and I think it's the trigger button, and it gives you one hint that just tells you what your goal is. And then you push it again, and it takes it a step further and is a little more specific. And every time you press it, it just gets more and more specific until it just straight up tells you what to do.
Does so it get, like, annoyed that it has to spoil things, like, completely for you?
It's a little flavor texty, but it honestly, there's no penalty. So you could do it just to see how far it goes into telling you what to do. And yeah, the game is kind of written like that. It's very, you know, it reminds me of your clever writing type of games like Discworld, like, you know, West of Loathing a little bit. Lots and lots of dialogue, all spoken, and the voice acting is really, really good. I was actually very impressed with the voice acting. Everybody is kind of quaint and British, and there's personality, and, like, you know, they actually sound like they're talking to each other rather than reading random lines off a script in various pitches, which is usually what you get out of video game voice acting.
Yeah.
So I like the conversational style. So yeah, I mean, basically, so with the first game, it's not one of those things where you, like, point to an area and he goes to the area. You actually have full control over him, and you use the right trigger button to just search for points of interest that are near you, and then you can interact with them, either picking them up or adding something to them, or just looking at them with the magnifying glass and hearing what Robert has to say about it, which is almost always amusing. But I will say a difference between the first game and the second game: the first game has no touch controls. So I guess they just didn't implement that for Switch.
I wonder if it was a limit with the porting, because I know the Inner World is an older game, obviously, than the Inner World, the last Windmonk.
Right, right. But that's just a forewarning that the first game does not have point and click, but you're still going to want to play it first, because even watching the opening cinematic of the second game spoils the entire first game.
Oh, boy. Well, should we do the discussion on the second game before we get into verdicts?
Yes.
Cool. So the Inner World Last Windmonk, again developed by Studio Fizbin, published by Head Up Games, also released August 2nd on the Switch, this one for $14.99. The Flute Nose Dynasty has been watching over Esposia for centuries on end. In secret, they fill the roly-poly world with light and life. Emil, a traitor for odds and ends, has led all the Esposians astray, making them believe that the dynasty is in cahoots with dark forces. What's this one about?
Okay, so the second game picks up exactly where the last game left off. After some events, your hero, Robert, is in a bit of a pickle, and your first sort of tutorial, I suppose, just because it's a small in scale like set of puzzles, although it's already more complicated than the first game, has you controlling the pigeon that ate the thing in the first game, who actually does figure into the story a little bit, but his name is Peck, and he's a really dumb-looking pigeon. Like, his eyes point in different directions and stuff.
I love character designs like that, and I don't know why.
I know, it's always good. So Peck is now your protagonist for the first puzzle, and you have to figure out a way to get the hero out of his predicament, which involves really interesting cause and effect stuff that shouldn't make any sense, but, like, you can totally, like, if you just play around with everything, then you kind of figure it out. So, like, I was able to figure it out without any tutorial at first. And his cool thing is that he can fly around, but he's limited on stuff he can grab, and obviously he can't observe anything because he's a dumb pigeon. He just shrugs at you. If you can't do the thing, he just shrugs at you. Or shakes his head.
That's fantastic.
And anyway, once the hero is out of his predicament, then you find out that the game actually has dual protagonists. So you have Robert on the ground and Peck in the air.
Hmm.
Which is really, really cool. So now you have, like, a whole different dimension of, like, things you can interact with the pigeon if Robert observes that it needs to be picked up by a pigeon or something else. So that's really interesting. And apart from that, it's the same exact formula, it's the same graphics, roughly the same music. I mean, it's the same game, but just the next part. But I do like the improvements that they made in that you now have a variety of ways to interact with the world. The story's nice and fleshed out. You're dealing with kind of a different villain. Still the same religious people, only instead of it being like a Catholic Church parody, now it's like a moral majority Jerry Falwell parody.
Yeah.
Which I like.
I'm guessing it's hard to go into the story too much so that you don't spoil the first game at all, huh?
Yes, but I'm doing a great job.
I'm proud of you.
I'm being very... You already mentioned the character I mentioned, so it's a different sort of religious thing. But yeah, they're basically turning the people against the good guys by saying the good guys are what caused all the bad stuff that the bad guys caused, if that doesn't sound familiar and at all prescient to you.
Oh, never. Not at all.
No, not at all. And so, like, it's a much more intriguing story, I think, because it's fleshed out of the first story so well. It really kind of blossoms out of it. Most, if not all, of the familiar characters return, and like I said, it's got touch controls now, so you can just touch whatever point of interest, and it brings up the little menu, which ought to be, you know, really good for people who play this in portable mode. I largely played it on the TV, so I actually prefer the controller, but, I mean, it's there for people. And again, yeah. They bring back the infinite hint system, all Yay. Kinds of stuff. But yeah, don't go buying this second game if you ever intend on playing the first one, because it will tell you basically the entire story in a summary in the very beginning.
Nice. So
like they even kind of joke about it.
I was going to say $12 on the first game, $15 on the second. Is it worth picking up one over the other? Is it worth picking up both of them? What do you think of them?
I say the first one is good enough that it is definitely worth picking up. And if it appears to end on a cliffhanger, I don't know this for a fact. I just know what happens in the overall story. So it's kind of assumed that if you're going to get all the way through the first one, which is, you know, unless you're just going to like hint your way through it, which, I mean, that's up to your level of personal satisfaction with these games. It might be a long time and it'll take like a lot, because these puzzles are very clever and very complicated and very, very abstract. So if you get all the way through the first game, you're going to want to get the second game. I say it's worth picking up both, but, you know, pick up the first one and try it. There's really no reason to play the second one if you haven't played the first one.
Yeah.
But I say both games, definitely worth it.
Sounds good, man.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that is it for this episode. Thanks, Chris, for coming on and chatting about this stuff. Thanks to everyone else who is on here as well. Chris, do you have any final words to end the show?
Drink more water, people. This is getting serious out there.
It is. This weather is just stupid.
It is. It's as dumb as a pigeon.